kicks out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I didn't really have a lot to comment on that.
Andy and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of another Grand Prix, the second of our triple headers and the first at Zandvoort for 36 years, I think it was. And obviously the track has changed since. Lots of exciting banking coming. And I thought overall it was not the best Grand Prix in the world, but it was a tremendous venue from what I saw. And I think the fans were absolutely brilliant. Very respectful Dutch fans. You know, they cheered Max. They had the orange smoke. They loved it. You know, there was Tiesto there doing a DJ set. And, you know, the atmosphere seemed absolutely incredible. But at the same time, they were very respectful towards Hamilton and the other drivers on the grid, which was really nice to see, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that as a venue, it was just perfect. You know, who'd have thought the atmosphere by having a DJ before the lights out would have made a difference, but it certainly did. And also, I loved the fact that the grandstands were so close to the track, so they were so close to the action. Every time you saw a shot of a car, you saw a shot of thousands of people in the crowd, and it was great. And that turn three, that bank turn, was just bizarre, because it looked as though the cars were going to hit the wall just before they dipped down and use the gradient to make the turn. I thought it was a fantastic layout and configuration of that track. And very interesting. They played on Sky before they showed the race. They played some footage of Michael Massey there about 2 years ago discussing what they were going to change, and it all came together, and I thought it was a great weekend. Like you say, track action, really, it was all down to pit stops and strategy and hardly any overtaking on track, but it was a great race, I thought.
Yeah, and that banking, like you say, the G-force, when you go on a roller coaster and you do a turn like that in a roller coaster, the G-force is amazing. So in a Formula One car where you're actually steering it, it must be tremendous to go through that corner for those guys. And I thought it was great to start, you know, some drivers going high, some going low, and them trying to sort of find the fastest line through that corner over the weekend. It was just great, I thought. And yeah, a really nice addition to the calendar. We knew that they were going to go mad for Max. And we knew that Max was, you know, hopefully going to win the race, which he did. And yeah, again, another really strong performance from Red Bull. But Max is really confident and calm and just enjoying his time in that Red Bull, isn't he? But he's not being flustered by much at the moment.
No, I was really impressed the way he dealt with the pressure of the fans. When he was interviewed before the race, you could see he was kind of blocking out the pressure a little bit. And at the end, you could see he was finally relieved and he was able to enjoy the atmosphere, which was great. I thought Mercedes made a couple of weird strategy calls. They really did. I mean, the first one was Hamilton complaining that he was on the wrong tyre when they switched him to the medium instead of the hard. And I think he had a valid point there. The second issue was Bottas, who was told to defend Verstappen and literally open the door for him on the start-finish straight and just say, yeah, go ahead, mate. It's your home race. I'm not interested. You carry on. Obviously, we now know that Bottas is leaving the team. And I think the fact that they sent Bottas out to get the fastest lap at the end of the race was a really weird one, because I think Toto Wolff didn't have a clue that was going to happen. I think it was Bottas and his engineer said, right, come in, we'll put you on soft, you'll get the fastest lap. And then Toto, whoa, what's going on here? We need Hamilton to get the extra point, which they managed to secure on the final lap of the race. But it was all a bit bizarre. And listening to Bono on the radio, he sounded very lackluster when he was talking to Lewis. And Lewis was moaning, as he often does, oh, I'm on the wrong tyre, this isn't going to last. And that moaning started quite early in the race, I thought, which is typical of Hamilton and Mercedes when it comes to sandbagging. They always like to lull the other teams into a false sense of security by saying, oh, this tyre's going off, Bono, it's going off. Hoping that, you know, Verstappen and Red Bull react to that and bring him in early. Didn't seem to work this weekend. And I think, you know, Mercedes had a pretty poor show strategy-wise, which is very unusual for them.
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit like they're on the back foot, isn't it? Like, it's like role reversal almost, where the Red Bull has become the new Mercedes and the better car, the slightly better package, and the Mercedes is the one struggling on whether it be the car itself or calls, strategy calls, tyres, whatever the reason being. And like you say, Hamilton's moaning and the engineers just sort of seem a bit lost. And I noticed Hamilton was talking, he was being interviewed afterwards, and he said, well, we've got no upgrades, really. We're hoping we're going to be quicker at the next race because it's a different downforce setting and so on and so forth. But you just kind of get the impression that Mercedes are kind of like, well, this is it for this year. This is the car we've got. We've got to make the best of this. We're going to be up there, but is it going to be good enough to win the world title and to win the constructors? Obviously, they're still leading the constructors. Drivers has gone the other way. It's gone slightly back in the favour of Verstappen, but you know, this is Verstappen's title to lose this year, I think. And I think he knows that. I think Hamilton also knows that. And it's going to come down to a bit of luck, I think, towards the end of the season. But like you say, lots of changes. Bottas has been announced on a multi-year deal off to Alfa Romeo for next year, which was kind of like the worst kept secret ever. George Russell announced this morning to be joining Hamilton in Mercedes, which is going to be tremendous. And when you look at that for the future, you know, you've now got a young, real kind of fast charger in every team. You've got Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. You've got a couple in the Ferraris. That's their youngest driver lineup. I think it might be ever, certainly for a long, long time, with Carlos Sainz and, of course, Charles Leclerc. So they've got a great lineup for the future. You've got Lando in the McLaren. And then, of course, the signing of these new drivers, putting George Russell in the Mercedes as well. Each team kind of has a really quick, fast, young kid now. So it's just so exciting for the future. This is exactly what we wanted.
Yeah, and this morning also, Gasly and Tsunoda have been confirmed to be staying at AlphaTauri for 2022. So really, we need to find out who's the other driver in Alfa Romeo and who is the Haas lineup, because that hasn't been confirmed yet. And they've really fallen out this weekend, haven't they, the Haas drivers? It looks as though, Mick Schumacher came out after the race and said Mazepin has no right to be in Formula One. He's too dangerous. We saw it during the race in the opening couple of laps where Mazepin blocked him on the straight doing 200 miles an hour. I was like, what are you doing, man? And they had some issues in qualifying as well. Those two have definitely, definitely fallen out. So we need to see that confirmed. And of course, the Williams lineup is up for grabs as well. Who's going to go alongside the existing lineup of Latifi, and who's going to replace George Russell at Williams? The money looks as though it's on Alexander Albon, but apparently Mercedes not too happy with that.
Yeah, Mercedes don't want a Red Bull contracted driver in that car because they've got the Mercedes engine in the Williams, of course. The story is that Williams were desperate for Bottas and they wanted him as first choice. He decided to go to Alfa Romeo because I'm guessing, you know, it's a big company, it's a big backing company. You know, they've got a lot of money, a lot of budget. And the way he's talking, Bottas, they've got a plan for the future. They're going to really develop that car over the next few years. And I think he wants to be a part of that and, you know, do the Schumacher effect of taking a team from a very average team all the way up to top of the grid. So you can kind of see that he's got on board with that. It's a multi-year contract. So he's tied into Formula One for a good few years. But interesting that Williams wanted him and interested that he would rather go to Alfa Romeo in the end. So yeah, lots of interesting moves at that end of the grid, but you're right. You know, it'd be good to see Albon back on the grid in a Williams. Are they going to be good next year? Or are they going to be very average again? Will, you know, Mercedes allow the Red Bull contracted driver? Will he have to be released from his Red Bull contract? There's so many unknowns there, but yeah, literally a couple of seats left now for the season next year.
I tell you what, Kimi's going to be missed, isn't he? Apparently Alfa Romeo said they were more than happy to keep him around for even two more years, and it was Kimi who said, "Nah, I'm going to retire." And when he was asked a question in the press conference, just typical Kimi, just so brilliant, he said, "What will you miss, or what will you not miss about Formula One?" He said, "Being asked stupid questions like that." I just thought it was brilliant, you know. So Kimi will be very, very missed indeed, but look out for Kimi's son, who's coming through the junior ranks as we speak. He's entered some of the Finnish kart racing championships and seems to be doing really quite well. I think he's only 7 or 8 years of age, but you know, there's time. So Kimi Jr. may come through in years to come, as we've seen so often in this sport. But it's going to be interesting 2022. We've been talking about it for 2 years, haven't we, for crying out loud, going, oh, we can't wait for the rule changes. It's going to make the cars able to travel nearer each other without getting into turbulent air, and the overtaking's going to be good. It remains to be seen which team have nailed on these regulation changes and which haven't. You know, if you look at Red Bull, for instance, we enter the hybrid era in 2014. It's taken them 6 years to get a car that can beat the Mercedes. So are they going to suffer from these changes, or are they going to come out of the blocks fighting?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a team, you know, the cream rises, doesn't it? So Ferrari are generally always up there. Mercedes are generally always up there, Red Bull generally always up there, but there's always kind of a surprise team, isn't there? And that goes both ways. So, you know, you might get a team that is right at the top in the top three or four, and they drop down to like seventh or eighth because they just get it so wrong. And then you get a team that goes seventh or eighth and they go up to third or fourth. And there's always that kind of surprise team and that surprise package. And you never really know until they do the preseason testing. But I think all the big teams are going to be up there. I think McLaren will be up there. I think Mercedes, Ferrari, Red Bull, they're all going to be in it. I think, you know, the Alpine team have got a lot of, you know, financial backing, a lot of Renault clout behind them as well. They've got a great driver lineup as well. So I can see them being up there as well. But yeah, there's always going to be that surprise package. And it's going to be very interesting next year because it's going to be a lot closer, the racing. I think the cars are much more similar. The racing's going to be closer. Enough changes to spice things up for next year.
I mean, can you imagine Russell gets his dream drive at Mercedes and after winter testing, they realise they're the fourth or fifth fastest car on the grid because everyone else has overdeveloped their car. I mean, like we say, it's going to be fascinating. Even, you know, Haas, for instance, have spent no time developing the 2021 car. They've been working on the 22 car since the middle of 2020. You know, they could come out and be one of the top three teams. That's the fascinating thing about it. That's why I'm so looking forward to next year. But, of course, we've got to get this season out of the way first. And this weekend we move to Monza. We'll talk about that in just a while. But first of all, let's look back to the Dutch Grand Prix and get all the stats from Nicky from At Lights Out. Always has fascinating facts and figures. And here he is.
Verstappen is F1's newest home winner. Hamilton closes in on 4,000 career points and Kubica makes a comeback. Here are the top statistics from the 2021 Dutch Grand Prix weekend. With his first home win, Max Verstappen made the Netherlands the 12th nation to have a home winner in Formula 1. It makes 2021 the first season to have two home winners since 2014. Nico Rosberg was the last driver other than Lewis Hamilton to take a home victory, doing so at the 2014 German Grand Prix. The 2021 Dutch Grand Prix marked the 75th occasion on which a driver has taken a Grand Prix win on home soil in World Championship history, and Verstappen is the 35th different driver to achieve the feat. After leading the first 9 laps of the race, Verstappen became the 19th driver to have led 1,000 Grand Prix laps. Stirling Moss is the only other non-champion to have led as many laps. 469 of Verstappen's 1,000 laps led have come during the 2021 season. Talking of Moss, Verstappen surpassed the British driver as the non-champion with the most F1 victories. Meanwhile, with his 52nd podium finish, Verstappen overtook Mika Hakkinen as the driver with the 15th most podium results in Formula 1 history. And in a weekend of milestones for the Dutchman, this was the 100th Grand Prix in which he scored points. He's the 17th driver to score at 100 races. Finishing as runner-up in the Dutch Grand Prix, Lewis Hamilton recorded his 175th podium finish. Hamilton extended his record of the most different circuits at which a driver has recorded a podium, and with the fastest lap of the race, he became the first driver to set the fastest lap at 25 different circuits, taking the record from Michael Schumacher. Hamilton scored 19 points at Zandvoort, putting him just half a point away from becoming the first driver to score 4,000 points in his Formula One career. That's a figure which he could surpass in Saturday's sprint qualifying. On the other side of the Mercedes garage, Valtteri Bottas overtook David Coulthard as the driver with the 9th most podiums in F1 history, with his 63rd top 3 result. Rubens Barrichello is now the only non-champion with more podium finishes than the Finn. Bottas is only the second Finnish driver to finish on the Dutch Grand Prix podium. Keke Rosberg also finished third at the 1982 Dutch Grand Prix. And finally, after testing positive for coronavirus, Kimi Raikkonen was forced to miss the Dutch Grand Prix. That made this race the first time that he didn't start since recording a DNS at the 2017 Malaysian Grand Prix, and the first race for which he did not qualify since the 2013 Brazilian Grand Prix. Replacing him at Alfa Romeo was Robert Kubica, who made his first race appearance since the 2019 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Kubica returned to the former Sauber team for whom he last raced at the 2009 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix almost 12 years ago. Kubica qualified for the race in 18th place and finished in 15th. 15th is the pole's best result since scoring points at the 2019 German Grand Prix.
Thank you, Nicky. More amazing facts and stats, of course, across all the race weekends. You can follow him at Lights Out on Twitter. Just some brilliant stuff, blogs all weekend. It's brilliant. Here's a question for you, though. So now we know that Russell is definitely going to be in the Mercedes next year. So we know that he's going to be a challenge for Hamilton because we saw how well he performed when he was in that Mercedes last year when he deputised for Hamilton. If Hamilton doesn't win the title this year and it goes to Verstappen, is he going to get an 8th world's title? Because, you know, I think next couple of years is going to be a lot harder for him than it has been under Bottas. And obviously we know that Rosberg won the title, but, you know, very few of Hamilton's teammates have kind of gone up against him at the rate that Russell potentially could. So Will that eighth title ever come his way? Will he win it this year? Will he win it next year? Will he never win it? Will he just equal the seven? It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. He's signed up with Mercedes till 2023, and Toto Wolff says he thinks there's going to be an extension option on that contract as well, which means he could race well into his 40s, which obviously we're seeing Fernando Alonso and Kimi Raikkonen do now. How long Alonso will stay, you know, begs the question, but he's driving brilliantly, so I can't see any reason why Alonso couldn't still be driving a Formula One car when he's 45. And if you look at IndyCar, the average age of the drivers there is much higher than Formula One. Not as fast as Formula One IndyCar, but it's still, you know, a very competitive open wheel series. And you've got drivers pushing 50 in that series, and drivers who've been around for 30 years, you know, racing IndyCar. So there's no reason why, because they're so fit mentally and physically, why drivers like Alonso and Hamilton can't continue for many years to come. But you're right. I mean, I think George Russell is going to push Lewis Hamilton all the way. I think we're going to see some fractures in the relationship between both of them early in the season next year, simply because Russell will be giving him a decent run for his money. You know, Bottas, as we've said many times, just hasn't been able to live up to the challenge. He's been in the fastest car, and he hasn't been able to deliver. Just a side note, by the way, I thought Kubica finishing in 15 was brilliant. He hasn't driven a full race since 2019. He missed both Friday practices, and on a circuit which is up and down, undulating, left and right, constant corners, he drives with one hand. I just thought, A, his neck was going to go, and B, he was just going to end up right down the order because he was struggling to hold onto the thing, but he did really well.
Yeah, incredible race. And like you say, you know, he's got a lot of stuff against him, and he just, it shows how fit they are, shows how fit they stay when they're not driving the cars and stuff. It's just brilliant stuff. And this weekend is the third of our triple headers. We're back off to Italy and another sprint race this weekend as well. So we've got the sprint qualifying, which always kind of is going to mix things up a little bit. But I think the Mercedes are going to be up there again, but the Red Bull again, it's a good package at the moment. And I think it's going to be a very close race between Hamilton and Verstappen again this weekend.
Yeah, it's all a raw power circuit, Monza, so they don't take much downforce. So downforce is not a massive issue at Monza because it's so fast. It's basically two long straights linked with a couple of corners. So any team that have got, you know, real good raw power, Mercedes, Red Bull and Williams, to be fair, stand a good chance at the Monza circuit. Obviously, we saw Pierre Gasly win here last time out. And the sprint qualifying is going to be interesting again. It's not really sprint qualifying, is it? So on Friday, we have the two practice sessions and then a normal qualification Friday late afternoon. Then on Saturday, we have another practice. Then we have the sprint race, which lasts about half an hour. And that decides the order for the grid start on Sunday afternoon. So it's kind of like two races in the weekend. And the real qualifying, I suppose, is on the Friday evening. But it makes it interesting. And we saw at Silverstone, you know, Hamilton and Verstappen battle in Silverstone. Verstappen won the sprint race, and then Hamilton booted him off in the opening lap of the main race. It's going to be elbows out, certainly, at Monza. We've seen so many altercations as they go into that turn one chicane.
I'm going to go a bit curveball here and say it's going to be a massive Red Bull weekend. I think Verstappen's going to win. I can see Perez getting a second. He deserves a good race. I think he's had a lot of bad luck, Perez. He struggles a little bit in qualifying. He's brilliant always in the race. But I think with the sprint qualifying, I don't know, he's just due some luck. And I just feel like Perez is going to have a great race. So I'm going to say Verstappen to win, Perez second, Hamilton third. And I think a Verstappen pole for me as well.
Yeah, I think Verstappen is going to do very well at this track, but I can't rule out Lewis Hamilton getting the win on the Sunday. I think they've got to get their strategy together at Mercedes, which they were lacking a bit of in Holland. And don't forget, Mercedes' chief strategist left the team in around about April because she was on maternity leave and still is. And since then, Mercedes haven't made the best calls, in my opinion. They used to always have every call nailed on. It was all worked out. It was mathematical. It was scientific. Now they seems to be a little bit hit and miss. So they're definitely missing her on the strategy side back at the factory. On the pit wall, of course, they've got Bono for Lewis Hamilton. I think he makes decent calls. But who knows what goes on behind the scenes. But I think Hamilton's got a decent chance this weekend. I think he wants to try and equal up the points tally. I can't rule out Max Verstappen. He's going to be on the podium. It could be a circuit that suits the likes of McLaren, you know, because they've got a fast package with the Mercedes engine. And again, not downforce dependent, this track. So it could be very interesting. I'm thinking Lando Norris is due a resurgence because he didn't have a great race in Holland. I'm also thinking that Danny Rick is starting to look the better driver now. He's starting to get to grips with the car. It certainly looked like that in the Dutch Grand Prix. And let's hope he can continue to shine. So it's going to be interesting. Can't wait for the race this weekend. It's always a good one at Monza. Yeah, you've given your predictions. I think we're going to have a good weekend.
And I'd like to know if I can have a bet of how many times Lewis Hamilton says the word man on the radio. Because I don't know if you've noticed, he ends every sentence with it. He's like, my tyres are going off, man. This is not great, man. The car doesn't feel great, man. I don't know what to do, man. So I wonder if there's a bet I can have of how many mans are said on the radio by Lewis Hamilton over a race weekend. Because I suspect he's quite a few.
Yeah, well, we'll enjoy the weekend in Italy. No forecast for rain, which is good, because I was dreading that at the Dutch Grand Prix. I thought with those bank corners, we get rain, it could be another washout, but it wasn't. It was a bright, sunny day with lots of orange smoke around. I'm sure the travelling Tifosi will be enjoying themselves. Only 50% crowd in Monza because of COVID restrictions, but they'll still make some hell of a noise. We'll be back next week to review the Italian Grand Prix.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.